Support for this podcast and the following message comes from Duke Health, offering food, medication delivery, and transportation to communities hardest hit by COVID-19. It's all through a special partnership with North Carolina agencies and 16 community-based organizations. Learn more about Duke's COVID-19 response at dukehealth.org.
This is Tested from WUNC, a look at how we're responding to the day's challenges in North Carolina and the South.
I think I had really wanted to think that we were safer, you know? And there still are differences among places, but I don't think it could be worse is a great way to make decisions about what needs to be done. But it can be comforting in the short term. It could be worse. My name is Whitney Robinson. I'm an epidemiologist. I work at the UNC Gillings School of Global Public Health in the Epidemiology Department. I do work on social determinants of health. I'm really interested in how the way society is organized influences who stays healthy, who gets sick, and how we can improve that. We are in my backyard. We are on my back patio, sitting at a table under an awning, but it is still so hot because it is August in North Carolina. But it's a quiet day, and my kids are at school, and I'm just feeling hopeful and excited about the coming year. I have a first grader and I have a child in preschool. And so last week, they were both home the whole week and they are back. It's day two of the elementary school year and the daycare school year. And I'm just really hopeful that they can have a good experience. The people at the school and the daycare are working so hard, and I'm just hopeful. I also thought, you know, once we have vaccines, we really can be back to normal. I was looking back at a tweet from December when those first results from one of the trials were published. I don't remember, it was Pfizer and Moderna, and those like beautiful curves of the vaccine efficacy. And I just started crying because it did feel like we got so lucky. We got a miracle. I mean, when the CDC developed this new system of categorizing all the counties in the United States into four categories, I looked at the map and I felt somewhat reassured. I think the map came out in late July. It feels so long ago. But a lot of the country had high transmission or substantial transmission. And these are the counties that the CDC said people should be masking indoors. And my county where I live in Orange County, where the university is, was moderate. And it did make me feel, okay, more safe, even as I could see that so many of the surrounding counties had extremely high levels of transmission. And so even though I know that there's no barrier at a county line that keeps the virus out, there's even no barrier across national lines, as we've seen in a lot of countries, it still made me feel like, okay, all things considered, I'm a little bit safer here. My family's a little bit safer here than other places. But I think that was after there started to be some indication that with Delta, transmission is so high that even people who are vaccinated have a higher risk than we thought of potentially getting infected again. Mm-hmm. I think there had been this idea that if you're vaccinated, you can just go back to normal life, do whatever you want, pretend the virus doesn't exist, and that wasn't true. And in some ways, I think focusing on the fact that Orange County maybe wasn't as the highest transmission was also a coping strategy to deal with the fact that I'm a little bit helpless, that so many people I care about do live in those high transmission places.
Tonight, new misery in the metrics as the numbers trend in the wrong direction.
You know, unfortunately, I think we are looking to some sort of version of that, essentially two Americas, an unvaccinated, at-risk America and a vaccinated America that, relatively speaking, is quite protected.
Many people are recognizing and believing that this Delta variant is a monster.
I should have known that being in that moderate category was going to be short-lived, and it was. And so when I went back and looked at the map 2 weeks later, literally, we were high transmission. Ultimately, like, until we have a real strategy, these flare-ups can continue happening, and the indirect costs, like, even if I'm not infected, if the hospitals are full and something else happens to me, or the healthcare workers are exhausted, it's still going to have an impact.
Triangle Hospital leaders say they are dangerously close to exceeding available capacity. In some area hospitals, COVID-19 hospitalizations have now surpassed the heights from January.
Just a few weeks ago, I've had a family of eight that were COVID positive, all of them unvaccinated.
The new surge is threatening to cause burnout to many of the nurses charged with providing care.
Staff is exhausted. We are exhausted.
Frustrated, you know, disappointed, because I think I try to work really hard to communicate the need of it to the community, the meaning, the need of the vaccine.
So even if I can directly keep myself safe through vaccination and masking, there's still going to be impacts because we are all interconnected. I think we all grasp onto kind of some mental heuristics about what feels safe. So maybe, you know, people say no one I know has gotten it. And so that's just a mental heuristic about feeling safe and going about your life. Or I know some people and they didn't get too sick. That can be another heuristic. And in my case, you know, I have the ability to really structure my life and stay home and get high quality masks. And, you know, I'm vaccinated. And there's only been one case at my kid's school and there wasn't any transmission there. Like, that can also be a way to feel like I have this under control. What I'm doing is fine. I feel safe. And I think the people are trying to figure out where that line is. And even to me, it's not clear and it's a moving target. I think that as a public health person, my orientation is to think about the population and not just to think about myself and my family. And I've pushed back on people who define safety in terms of just me and my family. But I think I was also seduced by that because everything sometimes feels so out of control. And so I think I, at some points, do narrow my sphere to say, I just need to take care of myself, my family. And earlier this summer, I got to the point where a lot of the people I care about were vaccinated, people close in my community, and I had started to feel really safe. But we're not safe as long as most of the world is not vaccinated, because there could always be new variants. We're not safe if there's areas where my family members live, where transmission can get so high that there's just not good health care for them. And even if they're vaccinated, they're going to have other problems. I think I even let myself get lulled into the idea of I can keep my family safe even if other people aren't safe. And now I'm back to square one, realizing that that's not the way the world works. I finally realized that I won't feel safe until we're all safe. And honestly, that's discouraging because it's a steep road to climb. But its challenge doesn't make it any less true for me. It is what it is. We have to listen to people who feel so alienated by the healthcare system and by all these social systems that they're not getting vaccinated. I think there are people who are just hardcore conspiracy theorists, but there are people who say, you know, these systems have failed me over and over again. What should make me trust it? I mean, I've had these conversations. And I think a lot of what I do is I listen. And if they're saying things that are true, I tell them, you are right. You are correct. Like, there are so many other ways in which you did need care and it was out of reach and you didn't get the care you needed. Or, you know, in the South, a lot of people don't have health insurance. They work every day full time. They don't have health insurance. It's true. Don't let that necessarily keep you from doing what you can to protect yourselves and your family. And then I tell them about my experience and the experience of other people. And when they have questions, I really try to answer them. And I often will say, let me go and check that out because I want to give a good answer. And I admit that a lot of the things they're saying are true. Like, yeah, there are reasons for you not to trust some of these other systems, but I am telling you, for my relatives specifically, like, you know I love you. And I wouldn't tell you to do something I thought was dangerous for you. I'm a person who's very in touch with my feelings in general. I think my initial response to the pandemic was to work as hard as I could because I felt like, okay, I'm trained as an epidemiologist. I have expertise I can give. I think I put a lot of feelings aside to be able to try to keep going, you know, for my family and my work and to take care of people I love. Because I can be good in a crisis. It's focusing. But there have been times where it hits me. You know, I lost my first relative last summer. My aunt and uncle got COVID, and they actually seemed like they were doing well. And my uncle had been in the hospital, and he was released. And I talked to him on the phone, and he just sounded like himself. But then, you know, he got a pulmonary embolism and, like, died at home with my aunt frantically trying to save him. And there's some things that stop you in your tracks. And there came a point where I couldn't just keep working, where I really had to pull back and let myself feel it all. And that's a process. I've always believed that grief is a process, and I think it's just an ongoing process that's going to probably be with me for a while. I think some people really think about the fact that some people have really suffered tremendously. There are people who have suffered so tremendously, who have really debilitating long COVID, who've lost multiple relatives, who've lost their livelihoods, and they think, well, I can't complain because compared to that, things aren't so bad for me. But you're allowed to grieve your losses, you know, whether it's a family reunion you'd been looking forward to, or maybe a wedding that you thought you were gonna have, or, you know, just getting together with friends. Like, they're real griefs. They matter. This is your life, and it's okay. I mean, it's cliche to say, but my kids are very fun. Watching them learn and absorb so much, and being able to have conversations with them about things. Like, my son will ask me about coronavirus and about family members, and it brings me joy to be able to have conversations with him and for us to really talk about things and to also get his perspective and to see how curious and resilient, you know, my older son is. I've always liked doing things with friends. We do a lot of, like, outdoor, you know, walks and meals. We have a neighborhood swimming pool, and we got to go swimming this summer, and it does feel so good to get in a pool on a really hot day. That brings me joy. And in my work, I do find fulfillment. And I think in the pandemic, I have an increased sense of purpose about how important my work is and that, you know, epidemiology and public health are a calling. And I think I have unique insights to contribute because of where I come from and my training. Another thing that brings me joy, my church recently started meeting outside, and we hadn't been doing any choir or singing for safety reasons. And so now we meet outside and singing a cappella hymns. It brings me a lot of joy. I missed group singing. So that's another thing that brings me joy. I think a lot of people are very interested in science, and I love that, but I think it's also super confusing and frustrating. And people are like, why can these scientists not get this stuff straight? Why are there so many questions? And so I know the same thing about science that intrigues me, the fact that there are so many questions and we really have to, you know, do all these different kinds of study designs to find things, and the process of figuring out things is exciting. It's probably frustrating for a lot of people. I think that as scientists, we're also kind of tired, and sometimes we're not as clear or at our best because we're also really tired. So if you're tired, like, we feel you, I feel you. But I do see people around me really trying to take care of each other and trying to learn. And that does make me feel hopeful.
That's it for this episode of Tested. Thanks for listening.